Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Plattsburgh, New York, and was abused as a child by her own mother. At age 6, she watched her 3-year-old brother be beaten to death. She's the founder and CEO of Big Family of Michigan, and she says she's a survivor, not a victim. The author of Peter's Lullaby, she's the ambassador and the voice of abused children in America. Her name, Jeannie Fowler, and we're honored to have her as our guest. And I'm Jack Pasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible with Jack Pasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with the ambassador and the voice of abused children in America, Jeannie Fowler. Jeannie, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you very much, Jack. My pleasure to be here.
Jeannie, tell us your story.
Well, you started out by saying that I grew up in Plattsburgh, New York, to a very wealthy family. My mother's father owned a huge nightclub, and unfortunately that gave her favorite beverage, which was alcohol. And the more she drank, the more she abused her children, and I happened to be one of those children. I was 3, my sister was 2, and my brother 2 months old. And when my sister was hungry, she used to come to me for food. Because we lived next to a store, we'd go to the store and steal, get caught, and my mother would beat me because I'm the oldest. So we had to find a new way to steal food so I could still feed my sister, because after all, that was my job. I didn't get to be a child, but I got to have a job. But it was a very painful job, because every time we were caught, I was the one beaten. My sister would take a toy in, she would distract the storekeeper, and I'd steal fruits and vegetables instead of the candy, and run behind the store and wait for her to come, and we'd eat. But I still got caught. And one day my mother, in order to make sure I didn't go back to the store, tried to set me on the flames of her cook stove and burn my entire backside. Beat me till all the burn blisters broke. Then to make sure I didn't go anywhere, she tied me to my bed where I laid in my own waste for 3 days. And that's how my grandfather found me when he came to visit. And he called Child Protective Services himself and turned his own daughter in. And all 3 of us were taken from my mother's home, but we were all put in separate places. And we lost everything we knew as normal that day. But on the other side of town, a very positive foster parent was waiting for her first foster child. And she's told she's going to get a little girl. Now, her and her husband have raised their son. He's gone into the Navy. They're unable to have more children, so she's excited. She's got her room all ready for this little girl with the dolls and the lace and the dresses. But this little 3-year-old has no clue who this woman is, doesn't know anything about her. And that's what's so scary when our children are moved into foster care. The foster parent usually knows who's coming, but the child doesn't know where they're going. But at this woman's house, I received my very first precious gift from this woman. Because although she told me how much she loved me, I didn't believe her. And because when my mother would tell me she loved me, she would beat me and say, if I didn't love you so much, I wouldn't beat you so hard. So I keep waiting for this foster mom to beat me. Amazingly enough, the first gift she gives me is that she teaches me that you could love a child enough not to beat them. What a priceless gift. How do you love a child enough that you don't beat them? The second gift she gives me is she, at 3 years old, gives me a chance to just be 3 years old. Didn't have a job. Didn't have to fix her life. Didn't have to fill a void. I just had to be a child. But after 2 years, I'm taken back to my mother. All 3 of us. We're scared. We're crying. We don't want to be there. We've been ripped out of good homes. And before we even get to Chicago, where my mother has moved because she's unable to get us back in Plattsburgh, She tapes our mouths shut and ties our hands. And there's a new baby in the car. The baby she had to replace us while we were gone. When we get to Chicago, my brother is wired to water pipes in a bathroom. I'm tied to nails in a closet, and a kitchen separates us. To keep us quiet so the neighbors don't hear us screaming, she shoves hot washcloths down in our mouth, tapes our mouth shut so she can beat us, and we can't make any noise. And that's when my brother receives a gift, because his pain is so intense, his brain shuts down. It just can't handle it anymore. So it sends him a song, and he hums, ah, the only noise he could make through the washcloth. What he doesn't realize is across the kitchen from him, I hear this song. And as it comforts and puts him to sleep and takes his mind off the pain, it does the same thing for me. One day we get a beating that is worse than any we had ever received before. And I wait for my song, because this had been our connection now for all these months. No matter what my mother did, if he could sing and I could hear him, we were fine. We no longer measured pain anymore. We just measured the comfort the song gave us. And then one day when she beats us mercifully, just with this ironing board, till she breaks both his arms and both his legs, and then she wires him back to these pipes. And I wait for my song. She goes to work. She works nights. My father works days. And my song doesn't come. My pain isn't relieved, and I'm not comforted, and I don't know why my brother doesn't sing, but it's on this night that he dies from that beating that my mother gave him. While I just wait in my closet for my song, but instead of my closet being comforted by a song, a policeman opens my door and rescues me from this home. My brother died, giving me yet another precious gift. With his last breath, he gave me the only thing he had left, and that was a chance for me to live.
We're talking to Jeannie Fowler, and I'm Jack Crisullo, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to the founder and CEO of Big Family of Michigan, an organization helping to make life better for children waiting to be adopted or in at-risk situations, Jeannie Fowler. Jeannie, at age 18, you walked out the front door of the foster care home you lived in for 9 years. You never looked back. You put the abuse, the neglect of a lifetime behind you. You become a nurse's aide, a wife, loving mother, and a grandmother. And you did this, Jeannie, by your own admission, without God in your life until you're 48. How did you do that, Jeannie Fowler?
Good question, Jack. Well, it starts back when I was 10, because I was in the home of Catholic people. And we went to church every Sunday. But they came home and beat us and treated us worse than they treat animals. The abuse we suffered at this, what I call the slave farm, was horrific. And I thought, if that's God, I didn't want any part of him. I would go to bed at night and pray for him to just take me, let me die, because I was just too tired of the abuse. But he didn't. Instead, I was reminded of the song my brother would sing every night. So I'd start humming that at night, and I wouldn't hurt so bad from the beatings of that day. So by the time I'm 48, when I age out at 18, I don't go to church. I went to church on this farm because I had to. But I didn't believe in God. I denounced him every day. I hated him. Hated him. And told him so. Because he took my brother and he wouldn't take me. So when I left at 18, I got married, had my children, moved to Alaska, then back down to California. And then my husband died. And the family that handled the funeral were Christians. And the woman told me that, she said, why don't you come to church with me? I'd taken my husband's death very, very hard. She said, why don't you come to church with me? I said, Sue, I don't do church. She said, I'll look, I'll buy you breakfast. I said, what time's church? because that's how much church meant to me. I'm getting a free breakfast. What the heck? I got an hour, you know? So I said, sure, I'll go to church with you, because it didn't mean anything to me. But when I walked into this church called Little Country Church in Redding, California, in front of me on the wall hung Footprints in the Sand. And I stood there and I read it and I cried like a baby. Because that was the first time I ever realized that as much as I thought God had left me, He had actually carried me. I had no idea He had carried me. And He never left me. As much as I denounced Him, He knew that one day He would send someone to me that I would listen to. And He waited for that person to come into my life. And then He gave her to me for that one mission. Bring my sheep back. My lamb is still missing. And that's what she did. And I've been a Christian ever since.
In 1999, Jenny, you start Big Family of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
www.bigfamilyofmichigan.org. Tell us about this organization.
Oh, this is the best thing besides raising my children I've ever done in my whole life. We bring...
What about being on the show, Jenny?
Oh, well, of course, in 99, I didn't know you, Jack. Had I known you, this would have been the second best thing. But now that I know you, I'll have to reevaluate. But Big Family of Michigan brings smiles where tears used to live. We're kind of like the Ambassador Bridge. Imagine for a second children on the Canadian side of the Ambassador Bridge that need a friend, school supplies, someone to care enough to give them a birthday, someone to give them Christmas, take them to a ball game. And on the other side of the Ambassador Bridge is the community that has the means to give them school supplies, ball games, birthdays, Christmas, self-esteem, hope, something to reach for, look up to. Big Family of Michigan puts the child and the community together.
Tell us about the children you fight for, Jeannie.
I fight for my brother every day over and over again. He represents all the children we help. When this little boy died, something came to life in me that I was going to make his life count for something. As short as it was, it was going to mean something. And that was my promise to him. Not when I was six, but as I got older. The older I got, the more I valued the life he gave me. And so the children that we help are the children who have been raped by their parents, beaten, starved, born with drug addictions before they even get a breath of air, abused in more ways than you can possibly imagine. I was just speaking up in Vassar, Michigan last week, and I was telling my audience, isn't it a shame that the people that abuse our children can run around free and go to ball games and do whatever they want, but the children they abused are paying the price.
19,500 kids in foster care just in Michigan.
In Michigan alone.
You say, and I quote, "The biggest thing we do for these children is we validate them." What do you mean?
Well, because we're not seen. Foster kids aren't seen. When I was in school, nobody saw me. There's nothing lonelier than being in a room full of people and they just look past you because you don't count. You're not there. You're not a real person. You're a foster child. You're labeled. You've been abused. We validate the child's needs, their wishes. We validate that first and foremost, they're a child. They have to do nothing for Big Family. We do for them. You will never see a child washing cars to raise money for Big Family. You'll never see a foster child doing anything to raise money for Big Family. It is their turn for us to do for them. They have paid an incredible price to be where they are. And we just want them to know that all they have to do to get something from us is just be a child. That's all. We want them to have their childhood back because it has been taken away from them.
What's the biggest need of Big Family of Michigan right now, Jeannie Fowler?
Our biggest need is more people to help us get these things to the children. We need people that will help us put love packs together so children receive something when the police remove them from their home. We need people to collect school supplies. We're keeping 1,900 children in school supplies. I would like to keep 3,000 children in school supplies the whole school year, but I have to have school supplies to do that. I need people that will give us more birthday parties, people that will adopt a child for Christmas so that a child's wishes are granted. We need volunteers to help at the adoption festival where we bring children waiting to be adopted and families waiting to adopt together in a fun and festive environment. And that always takes place in September.
www.bigfamilyofmichigan.org. Jeannie, what role has God played in your ministry?
Oh, he's the top dog. I started Big Family. I thought I was going to do a few teddy bears and a birthday party once in a while. That's as big as my dream was. I thought if I did that, I'm good. And God said, not so fast, young lady. I was much younger then. Not quite so fast. I have plans for you. We started out, you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield named me their grand angel for the work we do with Michigan's children in 2003. And we got two storage units for that. And we thought, oh my gosh, look at all the room we have. Well, we outgrew that. And then we got a 1,200 square foot warehouse and we outgrew that. And then we got a 2,400 square foot warehouse and we outgrew that. And the Lord just keeps giving us more things, more every Christmas. The first Christmas I had Big Family, we granted wishes for 12 children. That was 10 years ago. Last year, we granted wishes for 6,000 children. And every year at the end, I say, God, give me one more child next year. Give me one more child. Well, he's given me 6,000 now. Maybe next year it'll be 8,000. That means I need a lot of toys.
We're talking to Jeannie Fowler, and it's very obvious she's not bitter. We'll ask her why not when we come back. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now, back to Anything is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with the author of Peter's Lullaby, Jeannie Fowler. Jeannie, you're not bitter. Why not?
Good question again. Well, I had some very special gifts given to me. And the first one, of course, was a positive foster parent when I was three. Now, I always tell people that a foster child is going to take something from you. Whether it's negative or positive is going to depend on what you give them. And Aunt B, my first foster parent, gave me positive. And that's what I took and that's what I kept. And that's why it's so important now to have good foster parents. We need them so much for our kids, new foster parents. But I kept what she gave me close. I treasured the kindness she showed me. And who would have ever taught me how to love my children had she not taught me how to love a child? Everybody else taught me how to hurt children, but she didn't. And then, of course, a little boy. They gave me a song of hope and comfort every single day, and I sang that every night for 9 years on that farm. So when I aged out at 18 and left that slave farm, I left their garbage and all their negativity in their kitchen where it belonged. It wasn't mine, and I wasn't going to carry it anymore. Because if I carried it, I would be the exact same person that I would act just like the person that killed my brother. And did he die so I could grow up and be just like the mother that took his life? So I had to leave that behind. I never looked back. I took the positive things with me, and I kept them, and I keep them still today. But that's what keeps me the survivor and not the victim.
Jeannie, that little boy still lives today.
He lives.
In your heart.
He lives. He will always live. The first picture, the cover of my book, The Blue Sky, represents him. My children have a part of him. Their children have a part of him. And he represents all the children that we help today.
Ginny, if God told you today, let's go back and I'll make your mom different, your choice, Ginny Fowler, what would you tell him?
No, thank you. I wouldn't go back. Because I wouldn't come back the same person. I wouldn't be who I am today had I not taken the journey he had outlined for me. I would be someone else. There's a reason all these things happened. It's not for us to question the reason. It's for us to do what we're supposed to do here on earth and learn from the tools we were given on the journey we took. So I'll keep on the same journey.
Ginny, someday when your journey is up and you meet our Maker and he says, "Welcome home, good and faithful servant," what will you say to him?
Well, the first thing I'll say to him is I want to see my brother. And then God knows he gave me a sense of humor. So I honestly will say to him, "Is this really the best body you could give me on earth? I wanted tall and you gave me short. I wanted thin and I got lug." But he'll appreciate that because he, look what he made.
When he takes you to your brother Peter, what will you say to Peter?
I did the best I could, Peter. You lived on for many, many years and will continue to live on through the children we have helped in your name. You've done well, my boy.
And I think your brother will tell you, "Ginny, you've done better than anybody up here ever thought that you could. He exceeded expectations."
Yeah, all the foster parents that abused me are now gone. I did better than they thought I would do. And that takes us back to what Big Family does, because we do value the children. And we want to instill on our neighbors and our teachers and our clergy that we need them to recognize and report child abuse. We need to validate that these children exist. We need to have compassion and empathy with the needs of these children. So our work isn't done yet.
www.bigfamilyofmichigan.org. We're talking to Ginny Fowler. She's the recipient of the civilian version of the Congressional Medal of Honor, Tall Cotton. Recently, a couple weeks ago, Ginny, a three-year-old was found beaten and starved to death by his aunt and his uncle here in town. What do you think when you hear these stories?
It saddens me that as far as we have come in this world, that we still don't take care of our children any better than we've ever done in the years in the past. I mean, over 50 years ago, my brother was starved and beaten. And then a few weeks ago, another girl. And every day there's a child that dies as a result of child abuse and child neglect. We are not watching our children. We are raising an angry village.
Why does God allow this, Ginny?
Oh, God doesn't allow this. God does not allow this. He gives every child to an angel. But as we know, there are angels that fall away. They're not good angels. I mean, God knows that better than anybody. So he has to give them to other angels. But the ones that have abused the children, that wasn't God's choice. That was the path that these people took. Not a path that God had outlined for them. We all have roads to travel, choices to make. He does give us choices. But he does not allow this to happen.
You say regularly that you're a survivor, not a victim.
Right.
What's the difference?
Well, to me, a victim would still be angry. A victim thinks the world owes them something because of what they went through. A victim has a chip on their shoulder. A victim doesn't appreciate where they are and never looks back at where they've been as a gift. A survivor does. What I went through was a gift. It didn't feel like a gift at the time, but it was a gift because it made me who I am today. A survivor, I think, what do I owe these children? Not what do people owe me? People don't owe me anything. But we owe the children a lot because we need to give them a reason to be survivors, because right now they're victims and we want to show them that they don't have to stay a victim. I could have been a victim. Heaven knows I certainly had it hard enough. But then my brother didn't die so a victim would live. He died so a survivor would live.
If there's a listener tonight that says, Jeannie, I see myself as a victim. I have my whole life. How do I change?
I'll talk to them. I'll tell them my story. I'll tell them how I did it. They can go to my website and email me at any time. I answer every email. I want them to see by example that you will gain, if you stay a victim, you will only be that. You will never accomplish anything more than being a victim. But if you choose to be a survivor, there's not a single thing in this world you cannot achieve. But you can't achieve it if you stay a victim.
Jeannie's email is jangelfun@sbcglobal.net. jangelfun@sbcglobal.net. Jeannie, how'd you ever choose that as an email address?
Well, J is my first initial, and I was named Blue Cross Blue Shield's Grand Angel in 2003, and once you're their angel, you're always their angel. And Blue Cross Blue Shield has been very good to the communities in nominating and electing many, many angels through the years. So I am their angel, and hopefully the children think of me as an angel that has come to help them. And I can be fun. I really can.
All right, we're talking to Jeannie Fowler, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
He gave her Peter's lullaby, a simple childhood song, but the memories help the little girl feel strong. The little girl feels strong.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
That's Peter's Lullaby. We're with Jeannie Fowler, the ambassador and voice of abused children in America. Jeannie, what do you say to a listener who says, I hate God, he's not in my life?
Well, I understand where they're coming from because I used to say that myself. I want them to remember that we do nothing by ourselves. And no matter where they are in their life or what they're facing, there is someone watching over them. So even if they think God isn't there because of the pain they're in, imagine the pain if God wasn't there. It would be worse. So don't give up on God because he's not giving up on you. So when you think that he is not there, look behind you and see how many footprints are in the sand.
In these tough times, a lot of people hate each other. They hate. You say, and I quote, when you have hatred, the person you hate controls you.
Well, they do. Because when you're angry and you hate someone, and that's how come bullies have so much power, is because they can make the person who has no self-esteem feel worse. They have all the power. They make you feel like nothing. and you don't want to go to school, you don't want to face them, you hate them, and that just feeds their power more. But the day that you stop fearing them, the day you stop hating them, the day you smile at them instead of try to run, is the day you take their power away and you take it back to yourself. Hatred's a horrible thing. It's a very, very strong emotion. And I don't think that the people that are bullying and abusing should have that power over you. You take your power back.
If a neighbor or a teacher suspects that a child's being abused, what should he or she do?
Well, you can call Child Help USA. You can call 911. You can report it to any police officer. You can report it to a teacher. You can report it to a doctor, clergy, bus drivers. Email me. I'll report it for you. You do not have to know for sure that a child is being abused. You only have to suspect it. And you can call it in and report it. There are child abuse helplines all over every city and state throughout the entire United States. You can call, but 911's the easiest call of all, and report it. When you don't report, a child could die. And big family can't help the child then.
19,500 foster children in Michigan alone. If some are listening this evening, what do you say to them, Jeannie Fowler?
To the children? Every day I feel your pain. Every day I know where you've been and what you've been through. But I want you to remember a little boy who felt the same pain and gave strength to a bigger sister. Today, I'm your big sister. Give me your pain. Tell me, tell somebody, because we are going to help you. Silence is your biggest enemy.
If one of these children say, I know I need self-esteem, I hide it, you know, I'm a bully. Jeannie, how do I get true self-esteem?
Okay, one of the best ways, it's not like you can go to the store and buy self-esteem. That's something that comes to you gradually. You don't just pick it up one day. But if you're a bully and you're trying to mask your shortcomings by being stronger than everybody else or meaner than everybody else, which is a behavior pattern that many abused children exhibit. I always say there's a why for every what a child does. Well, there's a reason the child is acting the way they are acting. So you have to ask yourself, what am I letting the people really see? Am I letting them see the bully when I want them to really see the pain this child is having? Many children can't process that logic right at this time, but the adults that are seeing the behavior need to ask that question.
The most used verse in the Bible is, be not afraid. And Jeannie, a lot of people are afraid today. What do you say to them?
Well, if they're not a Christian, they better be very afraid. I mean, that's my advice to them right there. If you're not a Christian, you should be very afraid. All things are possible with God. And we live in a time where anger is more prominent than good. Everybody is out to see who can hurt the next person more. So we really need to turn to God for our advice and our strength and our guidance, and not to the people that are making the most noise, because that's what they're making is just noise.
If a mom's listening and her 6-year-old daughter's dying of cancer, or a husband's listening and his 44-year-old wife's dying of cancer with 4 kids, What do you say to them?
That's tough. But to the mother, I would say to her, how lucky are you to have had this beautiful child from God for 4 years? Look at the gift this child is to you, and you are to this child. Don't remember the death of this child. Remember the life. And to the husband, the same thing. Don't remember the death of this wife. Remember the life of your wife and the life that she has still going on through her children. Remember the good and know that the journey back to her father will be peaceful.
As our time winds down together, would you please lead us in a closing prayer, Jeannie?
I'll do that. Heavenly Father, I just thank you so much for this hour that we've had. We know there are all kinds of pain in our city, in our state, and in our children. You're the Father. We must look to you for our guidance, for our comfort, and for the leadership. Please, Heavenly Father, keep your gentle hands around our children. Show them the person they can trust. Give them the strength to tell. And lead them to the people's lives that we know you have chosen for them so they can become nurturing, positive, strong survivors. Give these special little angels that you created and give them to new angels here on earth to become their new parents. We ask you these things in your precious son's name. Amen.
To say you're a survivor doesn't do you justice. Jeannie, you're a world-class thriver, a true living angel. Keep up the great work.
Thank you very much, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spot on.